An airplane that looks so great, it's hard to imagine it was ever called the Goonie Bird. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into today's Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us. At Lakeland this year, I got to meet Dan Grider. Dan's the guy who brought the DC-3 airliner, which towered over everything else on the ramp. After seeing the plane up close, inside and out, I enjoyed the chance to talk to Dan about the aircraft and his sponsor, HERPA. The plane really has what they call ramp presence.
It's a neat-looking airplane. It's a pleasure to fly it here.
I have to ask you, before we even get into what HERPA is doing sponsoring the airplane, how you came to fly a DC-3?
Well, it came available as a freighter, and it seemed like a good idea at the time, but we bought it about 7 years ago, and I've been giving flight instruction in it, and that kind of just evolved into doing air shows with it.
Now, you are based in Atlanta, so what is your general radius? Where would people expect to see the plane during the course of the year?
Typically within 500 miles. We'll hit some of the smaller air shows within 400 or 500 miles.
And you will be in Oshkosh this summer?
Planning on being in Oshkosh, yes.
All right, now, you bought the airplane because it seemed like a good idea for hauling freight. How did it translate into doing what you're doing now? Was it an attempt to publicize your training program? Or?
No, the airplane had been a freighter when I bought it, and my mission was to do flight training with it. So okay. we got that going, and we built some books and checklists and developed an FAA-approved training program. And things, you know how things kind of evolve, but the whole training program just evolved. And amazingly enough, the customers have started small, but the customers have just grown. The customer base has just grown tremendously in the last 7 years to where there's now an actual demand for flight training.
Let's talk about what happens when you bring this thing to an air show. First of all, tell us how the relationship with HERPA came about.
HERPA is a maker of die-cast models in Europe, and they had seen us at some point and wanted to know if they could buy a DC-3 and have me manage it for them. And I quickly convinced them. I said, you know, really the easiest thing, why don't you just use my airplane and you can decorate it however you want it, and we can make it say whatever you want, and then I'll crew it for you and take it wherever you want it to go, and be a lot cheaper and a lot easier. And they quickly realized that that was probably the best solution. So that's the way that came about.
Okay, now is the livery in which it appears here, the paint job, was that designed by HERPA? And did they design the model first or the real thing first?
You know, that's an interesting story. We co-designed the model and the exterior surface at the same time, and we swapped the files via internet to make them match the airplane in the States and match the production process in Europe until we both were satisfied with something that I could put on the airplane. And then we both went to work, and they built the models, and I converted the airplane, and it worked.
You think they had any kind of idea at the time how this would look? I mean, even when the DC-3 is sitting parked on the ramp with its nose pointed up in the air, it towers over everything, and you can see that logo.
Yeah, you can. We worked a lot on finding a classic line look to it and placement, things like that. But they finally settled on the colors and the scheme, and I think it really does. It's a very classy look to it.
Dan, let's talk about the history of the DC-3 itself. This is a very storied plane. When young kids ask me what a DC-3 is, I tell them that if they've ever seen the Warner Brothers cartoons, classic cartoons from the 1940s, whenever they showed an airliner, it was generally based roughly on the shape of a DC-3. It's that well known. What's the heritage of this aircraft?
Well, the DC-3 started in the was designed in the late mid 1930s as an airliner when America and the world needed a method of transporting people from point A to point B. And Donald Douglas designed the DC-1 as a clean sheet design. They had not designed anything like this before, and it competed against the Boeing 247, and it beat the 247, and they immediately went into mass production on the DC-2. So the airplane was so successful that Donald Douglas could not build them fast enough, and all operators worldwide had standing orders in for the DC-3, and it was a load-carrying all-weather airplane, and that's how come they built 14,000 of these eventually, probably one of the most produced aircraft in the world, but very durable, and Donald Douglas had great success with it.
Let's talk about some of the technical details of its load-carrying capacity and performance. It's got two Pratt & Whitney roughly 1,800 cubic inch engines. Tell us about the horsepower, the thrust, that kind of stuff.
Well, they were originally Wright powered, and they were 1820s. And the DC-1, DC-2 had smaller engines, but the DC-3 that they really made it into production with were right 1820s, and they were also 1,200 horsepower. We have the Pratt 1830s, so it's 1,830 cubic inch, and it's 1,200 horsepower per side. And they came with engines all the way up through military use, 1,450 horsepower per side, but they were basically the same Pratt 1830 engine.
Now, when this thing was in use as a freighter, how much would it carry?
Depending on the fuel load, it could haul typically as much as 7,000 pounds of freight.
On a typical VIP flight, though, you don't ever come anywhere near that.
No. In fact, our weights are running 21,000 or less down here at the air show. And we're good all the way up to, well, as a freighter, it was a good to 26,900. But, you know, we're 7,000 pounds below the real max gross takeoff weight of this airplane. We're very light on everything down here.
Flying it in today's environment, does it give away anything to the planes with modern avionics and all that sort of thing? Or in the type of flying you do, are the steam gauges just fine?
Well, you know, I cheat a little bit. I do have a Garmin 430 in there, but the rest of it's pretty original and pretty unique. But we fly this mostly by looking out the window like you would a J3 Cub. So if I've got an oil pressure indicator and an airspeed indicator, I'm happy. You know, if the rest of that stuff doesn't work, it doesn't really make any difference. The airplane doesn't know.
When it was in airline passenger configuration, how many seats did they put in these things?
At 10 rows of three for 30, plus a crew of three, two, a captain, a co-pilot, and a what they used to call a hostess in those days. And we still have the buttons up in on either overhead with a little button you push that says call hostess. And before they were flight attendants, you know, Douglas called them hostesses.
Well, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about your routine during the air show when we come back. We're talking with Dan Grider in Lakeland. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to Lakeland. Paul Plack here with Dan Grider of the HRPA DC-3. We're talking now about using the DC-3 in air shows. And Dan, as you pointed out, technically you are not in the air show when the airspace is wavered. But you do exhibition flying, I guess is how you'd put it.
Well, we do our exhibition flying in the morning. And then here at Lakeland Sun and Fun this year, we are in the air show. We're in the wavered airspace and we do fly. This year we flew three air show slots in the actual air show. They're very short. They appear to be aerobatic routines, but they're not. And aerobatics is designed as, you know, excessive pitch or bank. And we don't break any of those pitch or bank angles, but it looks like it from the ground. And we do some other unusual things. We shut off an engine and make a low pass just to show what the aircraft will do, you know, with an engine shut down, make a flyby with one shut down. Just for people that have never seen anything like that up close and in front of the crowd, in front of the camera, so you can see what this aircraft looks like. It's a transport category airplane, and it's designed to fly on one engine, and it flies beautifully on one engine. I've always said there's no reason we can't fly this on one engine.
All right. Now, one of the things that leaves a lot of people talking about when they get home is the one wheel landing and coming down the runway on one wheel. Now, I learned to fly in tailwheel airplanes, and they taught us that kind of as a tactic to deal with crosswinds at times. But is there any difference to doing it in an airplane that big?
No, there's really not. In fact, the DC-3 is so stable, and a lot of people have looked at that and said the same thing. You know, isn't that dangerous, or why are you doing this? And I have to say the same thing. Why did the guy climb the mountain? We land on one wheel because we can. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, as an interesting side note, the FAA called me after one of our deals, and they said, yes, we understood that you landed your DC-3 on one wheel and did a one-wheel touch and go. Is that true? And I said, yes, it is. And he said, oh, okay, well, thank you very much. You
know? And hung up the phone and said, hey, Dick, we got to get down and see that.
Yeah. No, there's nothing illegal about a one-wheel touch-and-go. If your other wheel doesn't ever touch, there's nothing in the FARs. And the airplane, structurally, there's nothing wrong with it on the aircraft either. And it does it just fine. So,
What other things have you done with the DC-3 that have surprised people at air shows?
Just what they call here, Wayne Boggs, the air boss, calls my yank and bank routine, which is kind of low level maneuvering the aircraft. We just get five low passes very, very quickly, and you guys have got some cockpit footage of that to see what it looks like from the cockpit to make that happen. But it's a very maneuverable aircraft, and we can literally turn it on a dime and turn the thing around, and it's a lot of fun to do. But it's at these lightweights especially, it's extremely maneuverable, and we just have a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I have to say that based on what I've seen here, an awful lot of people get to see that HRPA logo by your flying it, and we really appreciate your being here to show us how this thing can perform.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys. You guys have done a great job. You know, everybody has been talking about your TV news network and what you guys have done, and I wish you the best of luck and success in the future with building that. I'm convinced that internet news is the wave of the future for aviation. It's instant, and you guys do a great job on making that happen.
Well, thank you for the counter plug. Now, let me ask you, if someone wants to get in touch with you regarding either your work for HRPA or your flight school or any of that, what's the best way?
Just either one of my websites. I've got two websites, the Aviator Network or the DC-3 Network. You have to spell out the word the, so it's T-H-E, theaviatornetwork.com or the DC3Network.com. I'd be glad to swap emails or talk to anybody about flying the DC-3.
Dan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
I had the chance to catch Dan again before we left Lakeland to talk about the type ratings he offers in the DC-3 and just who's getting them. You'll hear that conversation tomorrow. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.